Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeta, Evan Basilek, Russell Young, and Sujeet DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information, should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 210, being recorded on the 4th of January, 2018. I'm Sujeet, and on Skype with me, I have Evan. Unfortunately, Kale is clearing his driveway of snow right now, as I'm sure many of our listeners are aware. Out here on the East Coast, we have this gigantic snowstorm that hit us. So I just finished clearing up mine, and I'm still hurting a little bit, but decided Evan wanted to do this quick podcast on a very important topic. So we're going to get to that in just a minute. Let's a couple of quick announcements to make before we get started on that, Evan. One is, you know, coincidentally, we talked about this on the Kubernetes show, right? We did a couple of episodes ago. I think I may have mentioned that Kubernetes is written using Go, the language called Go. And coincidentally, Microsoft released a preview version of the Azure SDK for Go. So that's one of the updates for this week. And, you know, you could just use the go command, go get command to get the new libraries into your environment, your Go environment. So that's one update. I think it's kind of very, I think it shows how important that language is, especially with Kubernetes becoming more and more important. And the second one is also related to Kubernetes, so I figured let me talk about that as well. So one of the issues that we have with Kubernetes is that it's not aware of the infrastructure, the networking infrastructure that it's running on. So it has this concept of plugins to abstract it from the networking and other features that are available at the host layer. So that this way, you know, if it's hosted on Amazon or Google Cloud or Azure, they can each offer their own variances to the networking infrastructure. And so the Azure Container Networking Interface, or CNI, plugin is now available for Kubernetes, which are deployed using ACS engine. This is still not available using AKS at this point, so that's something that we're all looking forward to. But what this means is that you can now make your Kubernetes environment associated with a specific virtual network. So if you have your own virtual network, you can attach it to that, and I think enterprise customers
this is
like
big.
That.
Right. I mean, that's huge because, right, I remember when, you know, back to like web apps, right, when we originally released them, you couldn't put them in the virtual network. And I know it's like SQLDB. I don't know if it's there yet, but that's been kind of one of the other things people always want in the virtual network. Like, this is the same thing. Like, once it's in your virtual network, you're not quote unquote going outside your VNet. You can use DIPs, like all kinds of things get easier to manage.
Exactly.
And so it's huge to be able to do that.
Customers just love that. Yeah. So really happy that. And again, as I said, I think the ultimate would be to have that in AKS, but that, because that's a managed service, that may take a little more doing. Okay, so that's a quick roundup of the updates, and the reason we have so few updates is because, as our listeners may know, we've been consumed with another issue this week, and we want to talk about that. Evan's been dealing with that front and center in his role. I just got back on vacation yesterday, and that's all I've been looking at today. So it's something that's very important to all of us, and I figured we should take a few minutes to tell our listeners about this so that they're aware of what's going on with this CPU vulnerability bug. So Evan, give us a quick overview as to what you've been hearing. What's your, what should we be telling our listeners on this?
Yeah, so, first thing, just funny story for the audience, right? The audience knows I've moved teams, and, I think we talked about the fact that some of the engineering engagements that I used to do from the support side, I was now on the recipient side. So part of what I do now in my role is when we have high severity platform level issues, either individual customers or broad issues, those land with my team. Well, today was my first day in the rotation for my new team, and this planned maintenance came through yesterday at 4. So if I figure out who put me on the rotation this week, we're going to have some words. So basically, originally we were going to talk about planned maintenance in general because this was a really big deal, right? Mm-hmm. And we had the concept of scheduled maintenance. I'm sorry, self-service maintenance, where you could go in and depending on where you were in the world and the size of the VM and a bunch of other factors, we would allow you to basically say, hey, my VM's sitting on a host that is not upgraded to the latest and greatest, and let you do that kind of on your own schedule. And we had about a seven-day window to do that. And then after that, we were going to follow it up with, hey, after that, we're going to do rolling reboots that catch everything else after that, right? VMs and availability sets that are multi-instance, VM scale sets, traditional cloud services, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So we had kind of a nice orderly fashion. But if anybody noticed, when we announced this, we announced it right after Christmas. That's not a lot of notice. And that absolutely wasn't our intent. That wasn't our goal. But now that the disclosure has happened with the CPU vulnerability, that was what was driving our schedule. It's a massive vulnerability, right? Impacts. I haven't been tracking the specifics super, super close, but every chip that's out there, every OS that's out there, like it impacts everything. I mean, we were sort of joking about it on a call this morning. Like this could, the last I saw, this could impact, a variant of this can impact ARM chips. So like your toaster could be impacted. IoT, right, is
right.
Like that. So this is everywhere, phones, computers, everything. So this is big, right? And so what happened, I will have to admit, I am in awe at their abilities. Some really smart folks, some really well, good security-minded folks in the Linux world put two and two together. They saw some code get checked in. They went, looked at this code, trying to understand what it was doing, put some other things together and kind of made the correct leap that, hey, there's a security vulnerability related to this. And this was the work that was being done so that a patch could be rolled out before disclosure, right? Because for these big broad things, they have the risk of being 0-day attacks. So there's an agreement amongst the large companies that do this,
right,
that says, hey, if you discover it or a security researcher discovers it, there's kind of a mutual handshake that says, hey, let's tell everybody privately so they can release the patches so that our customers are not broken because you told the world that it existed and then the attackers go use it, right?
But at some point we make it public, right?
Yes.
Or they will make it public. That's the understanding.
And typically it's like, hey, on this day we're going to do it and everybody has time to build all their, get all their patches out. And that was part of what we were doing. I mean, there's absolutely some other things we're doing with this update. Like part of it is we're upgrading the host to Server 2016, which enables the Hyper-V, right? So the capability to do Hyper-V on an Azure VM is implicit with being on a host that has Server 2016 as its base OS.
Right.
So we were in the process of doing that, and we, because the disclosure came early, some smart people put it two and two together. We and everybody else had to accelerate our plans, and so we had to unfortunately cancel the self-service maintenance, and we just started having to update the hosts in a rolling fashion immediately.
So, but they did have some time to do the self-service, right? That was just a short
period. They ended up having like 3 days out of the seven that we were going to give them, or maybe 6 days out of the eight that we were going to give them. It was shortened from what the intent was.
I see.
So that's one thing I want to kind of share with our audience right now. In hindsight, hopefully they understand that when we set the timeline, it was a fairly short timeline. We wanted to, right? We were, our hands were tied with when this was going to get disclosed. And oh, by the way, I don't think anybody wanted us to roll this out during Christmas.
Right.
Right. Like on Christmas Day. So we kind of had a limited window to do it. And then it got worse from the sense of when it was disclosed early, we had to accelerate our plans. Cause this is, again, for the folks that have looked at this technically, and it's a fascinating read, by the way, about exactly how this works.
And I have been studying it today, so I do understand how it works. But go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, if you want to talk to it, because I kind of read through it and think I have a sense, but if you spend a little bit more time, it'd be great to give kind of a quick summary of exactly, not exactly, but conceptually what is happening.
Yeah, you want, should I do it now, or are you want
Yeah,
to finish
no,
up
yeah, go
after
ahead.
that?
Yeah, 'cause I think, well, let me finish my thought, and then if
Yeah.
you want to explain what it is. But basically, because it is so impactful, so risky, we decided security trumps everything, and we went the security route, which is we're pushing this through our environment as fast as we possibly can,
Right.
to make sure that everybody is secure.
Well, I think that's fair. I mean, I'm sure our customers understand that, security trumps availability at any given time. So I'd rather have a secure system than an unsecure system that's available all the time.
Yeah, I would agree. It was interesting because some of the customers that we talked to, like, I couldn't tell them. In my role, I knew what was going on, because I had to, and but we can't couldn't share it. It was funny. One of the customers, they had been guessing, hey, is this security? Guys, I can't confirm or deny anything, right? I just can't, right? Standard statements. And then it came out, and they said, why didn't you tell me it was a security thing? I would have been totally fine with it. If anything, I would have wanted you to do it faster, right?
But you couldn't tell them at
Yeah,
the time.
and they get it, right? They were kind of saying it lightheartedly, but sort of serious. I mean, the vast majority of our customers, the security trumps everything, right? I mean.
I mean, you correct me with my explanation on how I understand this thing works. I mean, I don't. I think it's a very, very difficult problem to exploit, right? I know a lot has been said about how vulnerable this thing is, but you'd have to. I'm trying to. I'm having a hard time figuring out how somebody would exploit such a thing. But let me explain to you what's going on over here. Normal, and this is all hardware, CPU related stuff,
Yep.
right? So that's the one thing. It's kind of a semi-geek out session over here, but. So the CPUs, they have this what the von Neumann execution, right? That's the he's the guy that invented this thing that CPU instructions are executed sequentially,
Right.
and then at some point you can have a branch instruction, right, which will essentially cause it to jump to some other function, and then when that function is over, it'll come back and continue doing what it can. So they call that a branch. So that's one part of the thing. The other thing that that happens is the CPUs, the modern CPUs, they do this thing called speculative branch execution. So they look ahead at the branches that are there. And we're not sure if that branch is going to get executed, but they'll go ahead and pre-execute it just to be ready for when the time comes.
Because it's likely, right? It's high
It's
odds
fine.
of
Yeah,
me.
it's
Yeah.
maybe there's a 50% chance that it gets executed, so it'll go and pre-execute the branch. So that's kind of one thing to keep in mind. Second thing to keep in mind is the whole thing about caching, right? We all know about the L1 and the L2 cache that CPUs have. In order to reduce the time that it takes to get information from main memory, from the RAM, some of that information that's considered non-volatile is sent to L1 or L2 cache, and those are different levels of caches available on the CPU itself. So these two things kind of, these two concepts I just described have come together to reveal this so-called bug. So and what happens is that if you're and the way the bug is when you have a mix, if you so when this branch speculated branch is being executed, right? So the CPU is doing it ahead of time, and that branch has a mix of data access that is either cached or uncached. Okay, so this is the scenario they're talking about. This is when this thing could get sticky. And let me explain to you, one way it may happen. Let's suppose that this branch in the code goes left and right. Okay, and the left branch, it does some instructions, and maybe those instructions require it to read from main memory. Okay, and as per the normal caching logic we just talked about, it might then put those results into the cache. Now, if it turns out that that left branch never got executed, right, because of the way that the application flow, it actually took a right turn and hit the right branch. What the CPU does then, it totally destroys everything that was part of that left branch execution, right? It's like it never happened because that thing is just evaporated. But as it turns out, one thing that is not evaporated is the caching operation, right? The fact
Right.
that it loaded this thing from main memory into cache is not evaporated. So by taking this right turn now, what a potential hacker could do is by measuring the amount of time it took to read information from memory from a particular variable, right? It could figure out whether that variable was read from main memory or from the cache. And by measuring that time difference, it could potentially figure out what that speculative branch was doing. Okay?
Right.
So that's really where what this this code, this so-called vulnerability is it's the ability to determine what that speculative branch could have done by measuring the time difference between cached and uncached data reads. And this is, and I said, it's kind of a very difficult thing to someone to even exploit, I think. But it is a bug, no doubt. And I think the fix is probably that now when you go to the speculative branch execution, it will not cache anything. That is why there's this potential, people are saying, oh, it's going to slow down my CPU and all that. You're hearing all these kind of things about slowdowns. And the slowdown is essentially the slowdown of the speculative branch execution, right? Not the slowdown of the main execution, which is why I don't think there's going to be an actual slowdown, but that's what people are saying or
Yeah, I
thinking.
think it's one of those things of like, theoretically it absolutely could impact. And then the question is, like there's some newer chips that use slightly different optimizations that aren't as impacted. Like there's a lot of variables to be able to say, yes, this person, this workload will be slowed down. I thought the most, interesting thing was like because part of the way like you were talking about that we protect this stuff in the kernel is, we randomly assign addresses on startup. Right. And so by using this technique of guessing and iteratively looking at this, they can start taking some guesses based on stuff. So it's really using repetitive stuff, which computers are awesome at, to basically do enough iterations to break through a randomness. Right. And because it's not really random. It is, but it isn't, right? It's computers. I thought that, from a geek perspective, geek out perspective, I thought it was really a fascinating way to go at this. And because nobody had ever really looked at doing it this way, this is why it is such a broad problem across multiple chips, multiple OSs. Like this is just everybody assumed that this was totally feasible to do it this way, right? That it wasn't going to be crackable that way. And the one thing I did say, so you were talking about the vulnerability. So the last I saw, and this is really fast moving, but the last I saw is there have actually been proof of concept functional attacks that have now been published. So I think that wasn't the case when it first came out. It was more of a theoretical, but I think now people, really smart people in the security world have said, oh, now that I know how it works, now that I know what the fix is, I can craft something that will actually do it to a real environment. And that's what's driving all of us in the IT industry to just push this patch out so fast.
And another thing I want to mention is that the patch only impacts the hypervisor, the host or the host operating system, right? The host, the machines that are running on bare metal. It does not impact virtual machines itself. So if you have an operating system.
So I think, and maybe we'll follow up and put this on the blog. So I probably want to make sure that we're correct about this, but we are releasing a patch for Windows. So my understanding was this is true for anything that is on the bare metal,
Correct. Only
right?
for things that run on bare metal. But if you're
Yeah.
running inside of a guest operating system like most of our customers' applications on Azure don't run on bare metal,
Oh
correct?
yeah, if we talk specifically Azure, you're right. But like there's issues with like if I have an on-prem Windows machine, like I have to have
Of
this
course,
fixed as
of course.
well. So yeah.
And I'm talking about specifically in the Azure world.
Yes.
Most of our customers' applications do not get impacted by this because the hypervisor is actually emulating the instruction set, right? And we do not do that bad em that that this bad
Yeah, this
caching
behavior. Yeah, I
in
think
the
the last I had heard, and again, this is quickly evolving, is that we're going to release it as a standard Windows
Yep.
patch, and then everybody will have it,
Yep.
whether you're running in the guest or
Oh, yep.
on a physical or not. So
I did get it on my guest operating system
yeah.
On Hyper-V today, so it is definitely being rolled out to everybody. Yep.
Yeah, I think that was one of the interesting things that I saw, which was kind of one of the complicated things about figuring out the impact here is it came down to, you know, every OS vendor is going to do something a little bit differently, and I'm not going to claim to have any insight into exactly what Microsoft even did at the Windows level, but you know, there was definitely some conversation around, and I think this is what you're seeing with applying it on every OS or every Windows deployment, whether it's a guest or not, is we push it out and say everybody has it, and then you don't have to know or care
yeah.
what you're running on. You just have it, right?
Yep.
And then if you're running on it, then it kicks in and it's in effect. If you're not running on bare metal, then it's there, but it's not doing anything.
And for the most part, this has to be deployed as a BIOS update, though.
Yes,
right?
Ultimately, yeah.
Because that's what, I mean, the only way to control this flow that I was just talking about, where we disable the caching on the predictive, on the speculative branch execution, that's not, I don't know if that's something that the operating system can control. I don't understand much about these low-level functions, but I know I got a BIOS update on my laptop today as well.
Yeah, I don't. There may be some BIOS updates released, but I think you're absolutely right. Like, I mean, the OS patches are there because patching BIOS is not something you can kind of just push out.
Yeah.
Right. That's a whole another level of complexity and effort, and there's a lot of conversation on like what is the ultimate long term, you know, because again, industry wide thing. So.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of conversation around that. It's going to take some time to shake out, and we'll see. But, you know, the good news is, to kind of where we started, customers running in Azure, and I will give our cloud competitors, Google and Amazon, you know, they've rolled this out as well. There was some impact to their customers there, you know, but at this point, you know, everybody is in the process of rolling this out. Everybody made the decision that security wins, which is the right decision, right?
Yep. And for the most part, if our Azure customers are using VM scale sets or availability sets or PaaS with sufficient number of instances, they will not see any impact, right? This is just going to be a normal update domain style update for them.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. One of the things that we were talking about, we actually were working on public, I think we ended up going out with a tweet, the PaaS services, Azure mm-hmm. SQL DB, Azure Storage, like anything that's in that category, it is impacted because it's still running Windows and you know different OSs. But because of the way those services are implemented, the end user of that service has to do nothing, and
nothing.
There's no impact to them.
Right, right.
It just happens under the covers. We roll it through. You don't even know.
Yeah.
You know, versus you know, you look at with IaaS VMs, right? It's a different behavior, and when you're running a guest OS, it's a different behavior. So yeah, we have had that question a lot. Like, what do I have to do with my PaaS services or my SaaS services? And the answer is nothing.
And even with IaaS, as long as you're doing availability sets, right, they will not be impacted because it will do it one at a time.
Yes, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
And the VM scale set, same thing, right?
Yes.
It would do it in an orderly way. So yeah, hopefully, I mean, so if you're a good Azure citizen, I suppose that's the way to put it, right? Nothing should be happening. You shouldn't notice anything. But if you've been flying by the seat of your pants in Azure, then yeah, potentially you're going to take a hit.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I've seen, you know, a lot of customers who had kind of, and I get it, right? They moved workloads from on-premises to Azure. And they said, hey, I just got to move it. My data center's shutting down, or it's, you know, proof of concept. And then, hey, we just ended up using it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's going to be a lot of really interesting conversations of cloud users across the globe and across the cloud providers to say, yeah, you know, that kind of stuff where we were just kind of hoping that something would never happen.
Mm.
Yeah, we're going to accelerate some of those plans to do availability sets, you know, get rid of single instance.
All right.
Like all that kind of stuff is probably going to happen.
It should be front and center in all the designs now.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. So, I mean, that's a good thing in the end. It's a good thing for the industry. It's a good thing for customers. But it absolutely is a conversation that a number of customers are like, hey, we were hoping we never have to have this, and now we're going to go have it. So,
yeah. All right, great. Well, Evan, thanks for giving all our listeners that update. I know you've been dealing with it a lot the last couple of days. You haven't had much sleep. I'm sure a lot of people at Microsoft haven't had much sleep over the last couple of days, but
Oh yeah, it's been amazing. It's been I will say that one kind of one thing in closing, right? So to my peers in engineering, to support, to my team 6P, like everybody basically dropped everything and ran toward the fire. And it's been really great to see the entire company come together to, kind of roll this out as best as we could, and anything that went wrong to mitigate it as fast as we could. It's I mean that's a huge change culturally for us. As a company to do that, right? And so yeah, it's been great working with everybody. It's kind of fun at one level, but yeah, I'll be ready. I'll be happy when it's done.
When it's over, you can get back to normal stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Evan, again, thanks a lot, and we'll pick up regular topics from the next
I
podcast
sure hope so.
on.
Thanks. Thanks,
All
Ajit.
right, take care.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.